If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast.
Well,
yes. All right. So today, I'm not sure if you guys knew this, but it's Valentine's Day today.
What?
Right?
I know, right?
Valentine's Day is an interesting holiday, especially for people in non-traditional relationships, mm-hmm. because we're not the ones who are marketed to by everybody, which I guess is like kind of a bummer to get left out. But in some ways, it's like kind of nice that it's like, you know what? Cool. You guys do your thing. We'll do our thing.
We don't know how to sell to you, so we won't try to, you know... Shovel right. our stuff in your faces.
Right. But we did want to go over a quick little fun trip down history lane.
With for Dedeker those of
you, for those of you who have read Dedeker's book, The Smart Girl's Guide to Polyamory, there's an amazing history section on the unwritten history of polyamory. And we're going to do the same thing right now, even though it has already been written down, about the history of Valentine's. Take it away, Dedeker.
Yeah, so, I mean, most people know that it's based off of St. Valentine, that it's a Catholic holiday, you know, the mm-hmm. Feast of St. Valentine, that they just kind of decided was going to be on February 14th. So Valentine, the Valentine in question, was a priest who lived around the late 200s CE, or mm-hmm. AD, whatever it is you prefer. And he was martyred. So he was killed. And they have his skull. Actually, there's a basilica in Rome where they have the skull of, supposedly the skull of St. Valentine, and they put like some nice flowers on it. I pulled it up on Google Images and it was like, ugh. Because also somebody's like, somebody hundreds of years ago like felt the need to make sure that you knew this was his skull, and like they slapped a label like
Valentine.
On his forehead that says St. Valentine. Just like, there we go, now you know. So there's that to keep up with the weird tradition of keeping body parts of saints scattered throughout the world. But then I also learned that apparently there's like 10 other places mm-hmm. that claim to have the head of St. Valentine. So either somebody's not quite telling the truth, or St. Valentine was like the Gorgon.
And he had 10 heads.
And had 10 heads, each of them more
truly
beautiful than
terrifying.
The last. So the original story of St. Valentine has been pieced together through the centuries with lots of hearsay and mm-hmm. the telephone game being played. But supposedly he was operating as a Christian priest when Roman society was still pagan and Christians were persecuted. Back in the early days when being Christian was still kind of hipster, you know, when you were like, I was into Jesus before he got popular. And he was imprisoned for being Christian, and as the story goes, that he, through some miracle, he was tutoring the daughter of the jailer, who was blind, and supposedly through the miracle of Christ's power, he mm-hmm. was able to cure her blindness.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So he miraculously cured her blindness. Unfortunately, that did nothing for him because he still got killed. But supposedly where we get the tradition of sending Valentines is that like before he was killed, that he sent a letter to her, to the jailer's daughter. I don't know what it said. It could have been like, bitch, like, get me out of this.
Probably.
And so in theory, that's how we got the whole Valentine story. But in researching this, what I think the most interesting thing is that it was actually hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before the holiday was actually associated with romantic love. I could go off on this for many, many hours, but our modern day notion of romantic love was based on courtly love, which didn't really come around until like the 14th century. Mm-hmm. But that's a talk for another time. And so for many hundreds of years, the Feast of St. Valentine's was for other things. Like it was in many agricultural communities, it was considered to be like the beginning of springtime. Like mm-hmm. that was when the plants started growing. Some places said that the Feast of St. Valentine's was when the birds would propose to each other.
their little bird just rings.
So cute, yeah, with their little birdie rings.
Exactly.
I learned in some places there was like a Santa-esque figure called Jack Valentine that would come to the rear door of houses and would leave stuff like for the children, like mm-hmm. candy and presents, like very, very St. Nicholas-esque. Although apparently he was also used to scare children at the same time that children were like kind of scared of Jack Valentine. So I don't know what was actually going on. I don't know if Jack Valentine was like a pedophile and the stories of the pedophile just like blossomed and got out of control. But anyway, so this holiday that has so much attached to it and so much meaning and so much significance has actually had quite a long history of its meaning changing many times throughout the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now bringing us to modern day.
Yes.
Valentines get some hate, right? I imagine there's probably some people in this audience right here who have posted some hateful things about Valentine's Day.
Does anybody
Day.
Like really not like Valentine's Day? I mean, I guess
I mean,
you're out
here
celebrating,
yes.
So maybe
Seems
you,
like
you think it's semi-okay.
I know there have been times where I've been like, fuck Valentine's Day,
yeah.
right? Because you're sad, maybe you don't, maybe you're not with someone at the time. It's like, oh, Valentine's Day is mm-hmm. just this reminder of how alone I am. right. Or, you know, or other people saying, oh, well, you know, I don't need some commercial holiday to make my relationships valid or mm-hmm. to that I have to somehow prove to my partner that I care about them by buying stuff on this day. Mm-hmm. That there is this kind of, I don't know, like unique distaste for this holiday in a way that I don't think a lot of other holidays get.
Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of since the advent of social media is when I really noticed that, like, there's kind of this collective joy on both ends of the spectrum. It's like people either have this extreme joy in like, this is the day that I really get to mush it up on Facebook and post all the mushy pictures of me and my significant other, or it's the day that I really get to soak into talking about this horrible capitalist holiday and how I'm going to be just at home eating ice cream and masturbating and it's just going to be fantastic. I've always had some umbrage, take an umbrage at people who post a lot of stuff like that. Because, I mean, my thinking is always like, you know, some people don't have moms on Mother's Day, but you don't go on Facebook and you're like, fuck Mother's Day. Yeah. This is terrible. or same thing on Father's Day. You know, people don't have dads on Father's Day. And so my thing is like, well, if you don't have someone that you're with in a relationship on Valentine's Day, you know, like either make it about something else or I just feel like there's not necessarily this need to be so reactive in expressing your displeasure about a celebration of love. Mm-hmm. That's my soapbox.
Yeah. And I think that something that is a valid complaint about Valentine's Day, which we're going to talk about today, and we're going to try to find some new ways of thinking about Valentine's Day, is the sort of inherent couple centrism in our society. And basically, we actually just talked about this a lot in our episode yesterday in Portland. But basically, the short version is that our society is so much oriented around the couple as sort of the primary building block of society, that a two-person couple is that. Meaning, you know, not only that that's kind of held up as the ideal of what a family should look like, that somehow that number is the best for children, all these things like that. But aside from that, it's also if you're not in a couple, you must be less happy or you must be less fulfilled as a person. Or, right, that's why we have, you know, some somewhat derogatory terms for men and women who are single sometimes. And there's that whole concept of like, well, you better get on that if you don't want to die alone. There's this idea that the couple is the only way you can not be alone, right? The only way you can be close to anybody is in this couple. And so we want to talk about that is kind of reclaiming Valentine's Day as a day to appreciate more than just having a couple relationship in your life.
I think that suddenly the pieces kind of fit together about I think why people sometimes can have such a negative reaction to Valentine's Day is because a lot of people are not in a relationship and are quite happy about it. Like some people are quite happily not necessarily coupled up with somebody, or maybe they just got out of a really terrible unhealthy relationship and being single is the best thing they've experienced in years. And so then Valentine's Day rolls around kind of holding up coupledom on this pillar. And so I don't know if that's like people's kind of attempt to express like, no, I'm really happy. And, you know, how is it that you're implying that If I don't have this thing, then I must be really unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a really good time to reflect on not only your couple-centric love or your multiple partner love, but also the love that you have for your family, for your friends, for whatever it is in your life, and kind of reflect on that during this time.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll definitely get more into that. So we wanted to kind of pose a question and talk about it and then bring it back to you guys.
Right. So the question is, what makes a good poly partner?
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue, what makes a good any kind of relationship partner? Mm-hmm. Whether it's a close friendship, or it's a romantic relationship, or mm-hmm. a sexual relationship, or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I think, Emily, you wanted to start with this
one? Yeah, so we actually got, in our Oakland show, somebody asked us, what is it that if you were to meet someone that would just kind of blow you off of your feet, what is it that you would look for in a partner, and what would be really exciting about a person that you would just meet?
Specifically, she was asking, she's asking, like, what's, like, one quality?
Specific quality. And we each had different things. I said flexibility. So just the flexibility of time, of knowing that you never really know what's going to happen in a relationship, and that you can't just sort of put a box around it and expect it to go one way.
Mm-hmm.
That it's really important to have flexibility in your relationships, in any type, but especially in your poly romantic relationships.
Emily's also a huge acro yoga person, and so
I really love flexibility.
It really does matter.
It comes in handy for a variety of things.
For me, it's so important for someone to be able to communicate, and I know that communication, we can talk ad nauseum about communication being the key to healthy relationships, which it is. But I think for me, it's specifically being able to trust that someone will communicate to me proactively what it is that they want versus, you know, and also what it is that they don't want. I've been in plenty of relationships where it's kind of like you just kind of, you wait until you piss each other off, or you wait until you stumble and there's a negative reaction, and then that's how you find out kind of what your boundaries are. It's like heading into the maze with a blindfold on that you kind of have to figure out based on what body part you've bruised, which is really not a great way to do relationships.
Yeah.
So for me, that's something that's extremely, extremely important. Like, that's something that when I see that, I really, really am attracted to that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for me, it's an open-minded, or, you know, my answer to that question was an open-mindedness to challenge things in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That there's not this sort of stubborn, like, well, I feel this right now, so that's what I'm going to feel forever, and that's the answer. If, you know, I'm never going to change. That to me, that someone who is open to being like, hey, these are the things I believe, and I've thought a lot about them, and I'm willing to challenge them and potentially change my mind. I might not, because I've thought about them a lot, but that sort of willingness to change and have an open mind is something that I see as a really valuable trait in, you know, in a partner or even in a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we wanted to put it to you guys. What are some things that are those just awesome traits of any kind of relationship, of a person in any kind of relationship in your life? It could be a short thing you shout out, or if you want to give us a longer explanation like we all did, you're welcome to do that. I can't see anything.
Yeah,
so like,
I can't see anything.
Yeah, so just feel free to shout it out.
Yeah, what do you guys find to be like good qualities that are you're attracted to in a partner?
Consciousness.
That's really good. So kind
can
of
you
like
elaborate.
Like
self-awareness, being aware of the world around you, which means communication and all of that.
Yes.
But in monogamy, so much times we walk into our relationships unconscious. We're just poof, we're in a relationship.
Yeah.
Where I find that there's a lot more consciousness in the poly world. And that's probably one of the key things. That and a sense of humor.
Yeah, definitely.
Humor is a good one.
That's a really good
really
one.
Wonderful.
Yeah. I think that the consciousness thing is so interesting because something that I've always told people that they're often surprised by is I feel like with people who very consciously choose monogamy, I have a lot of respect for. There's kind of sometimes this tendency to think that people who are not in monogamous relationships must see monogamy as inferior or less enlightened.
Yeah, that's absolutely not the
case. Or impossible or whatever. But I feel like the thing is that we're in a culture. This isn't true of all cultures, but especially Western culture. We're in a culture that just kind of dumps you into monogamy as the default.
Mm-hmm. As if there's no other choice.
Yeah, there's no other choice. There's no other spectrum. And so that's the thing, is a lot of people do go very unconsciously into relationships, not knowing if this is what's right for them or not. And so for somebody who maybe has explored their options or researched their options or whatever, and has very consciously chosen, like, you know what, this particular form of monogamy is what is going to make me happiest, like, that's freaking fantastic.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's something that, as a whole, we should be really teaching to people very early on, but yeah, we
they
don't
have options. Yeah.
Anybody else? That was great.
That was
Thank
lovely.
You for that.
Curiosity.
Oh, curiosity. Oh.
Curiosity. And
I'm curious to know more.
One thing that I've like realized just in trying to become a better communicator myself is when you ask somebody about whatever it is they're passionate about, even if it's not something that I'd ever thought about or found interesting myself, when you get somebody talking about something that they're passionate about, they just light up. And when you really like practice active listening and whatever, you know, it's amazing. Like, I can become fascinated by something that I had no interest in or no hadn't thought about even.
Yeah.
But like, and so when people show me that curiosity too, that just, I love that kind of exchange.
What are you passionate about?
A lot of things.
Can you get us fascinated?
I'm really passionate about catching fish.
That's awesome.
Okay.
This is
all
the
right.
place to do it.
I'm a commercial fisherman, so.
Nice.
So.
Oh,
and
nice.
Just, yeah.
Nice.
Excellent. What yeah. else?
Positivity.
Yeah?
Positivity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Being able to...
Being able to turn things around or, like, see something in a different way, like, you know, the biggest upsets don't have to, like, uproot your whole life, like, you can move forward. I like seeing that in people.
Yeah, definitely. I think that very much ties to, you know, kind of the open-mindedness and self-awareness to be able to kind of examine your own emotional life. Because, yeah, I mean, as we know, you know, moods are very ephemeral and transient, and they move and they change and they shift. And so the idea of being able to at least acknowledge when you're in a negative space, like, well, this won't last forever.
Like, the sun's not always shining, but it's there. It's
yes. Yeah.
That's
very good.
Oh, I was going to say, I agree with that. I would put it under, for myself, the banner of perspective and kind of a sense of scale.
Absolutely.
You know, I am still getting better at, like, not making mountains out of molehills.
Yeah.
And I respect somebody who has, you know, yes, the self-awareness and the positivity and everything, you know, this is not the end of the world. In 2 hours, 2 weeks, 2 years, I won't even remember this.
Yeah.
I find that really refreshing because it shows a willingness to move forward and to, you know, to know that things change, and that how you feel now doesn't have to determine nearly as much of the future as you might almost want it to in those moments.
Yeah,
that, this seems to be a recurring theme, because that's something that we hit on in the Oakland show as well, is this idea of having that perspective that your feelings are not permanent and your feelings aren't facts and even your thoughts are not always true.
Yeah. Something that we've also been on lately on the subject of positivity is the idea of focusing on the things you want instead of the things that you don't want. That even just, this is something that I always, like, in discussion groups will try to challenge people for this. If they'll say, you know, like, I'm really frustrated that there's, you know, bi erasure in our poly community or something like that. And I'd say, okay, like, what would that look like as a positive? What is it that you do want instead of what is it that you don't want?
Yeah.
I know that's, like, a little different than the type of positivity you're talking about, but I've also found that to be a subject that keeps coming up for us,
yeah.
is that question of, like, how can you think about what you do want instead of what you don't?
Yeah.
It's also helpful.
Can we get one more?
Patience. Sense of self.
Whoa.
Patience, sense of self.
Okay.
Great. I saw another hand, too.
Self-advocacy.
Yes.
Yeah. Jumping off of what you were saying, the ability to, like, convey what you want and be like, no, this is what I want, what I need at this point, and I need you to be able to at least be open to that. If you can't provide it, at least be open to me getting it elsewhere.
Yeah,
that's a really important one.
Yeah.
It's funny, I mean, these are such amazing responses, like, yeah. so very smart is
very,
what
very
I find.
Thoughtful,
you're all,
Seattle
very
audience.
Thoughtful, yeah.
Very well spoken.
I wish these were things, I don't know, like, it. To me, it feels like these are kind of lessons that you don't learn until you've had some fuck-ups under your belt.
Maybe we're just talking about ourselves.
That's how I've had to figure it out.
For sure.
And, I mean, I kind of wrote about this in the book, is like, what is, you know, if you could paint a picture of what would it be like to come into your adult life having more relationship skills under your belt and more, like, emotional intelligence skills under your belt? Because, like, seriously, when I was growing up, like, the only actual relationship education I got in school was, like, wear a condom.
Yeah.
Or just don't.
Or just don't have sex.
Or just don't have sex. Like, that was it. Like, we don't
talk. We didn't get that.
Really? Yeah, yeah. Some people don't even get God. It's like we still kind of have the sense that like relationships can be on autopilot. I mean, sure, we teach people to be nice and to share your toys and to do all those things that you learn in kindergarten. But when it comes to romantic relationships, it's kind of like we wait until you become an adult and you need therapy and couples counseling, and then you can learn a bunch of lessons about relationships.
Yeah. Just a lot of trial and error.
Definitely.
So, okay. We wanted to talk about the fact that in polyamory, every partner doesn't need to be everything to you. That's a really amazing part of it for me. Like, I get very different parts of myself through different partners. I can be one way with one person. I can be another way with someone else. And for me, I mean, I fill my life to the brim. I have three jobs. I'm in a musical right now. I do this, which is another full-time job. And so I don't have a lot of time to devote to a lot of people, at least at this point in my life. And if I was in a monogamous relationship, that would probably be a deal breaker for a lot of people. But instead, I'm able to, you know, maybe see someone once a week or maybe every other week and still kind of pick up where I left off with them. And you can still create these really meaningful relationships, even though your time may not be there at all times, or even though someone, I don't know, may not love video games as much as you do, but you can do something else with them. You can go fishing. So, yeah, that's something to me that I really love about being polyamorous, is that your relationships can look however you want them to.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, you know, all those qualities that we talked about, that they can kind of be distributed in a slightly different way, that we don't necessarily have to have someone who checks all the boxes. Of course, you can have, I think you can have your foundation of like, these are things that I expect in every relationship.
Of course.
But then kind of beyond your foundation, that then it can really be all over the place, which is actually pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, yeah, there's certain things like standards for the type of communication and for the way they handle conflict and things like that. That it's like, yes, I would expect this in all of my relationships,
yeah,
or I wouldn't want to be in it. But it's like Emily was saying, it's more those specifics of whether it's just the amount of time that you have, or you know, or distance, for example, like long distance relationships. Has anyone here had a long distance relationship? Lots of hands. Have you ever had a long distance relationship while you're monogamous?
How was that experience?
It's tough. It's really tough. And that's a case where, you know, for Dedeker and myself, for the past year and a half, we've spent maybe like three of those months in the same geographic location. Mm-hmm. Right? And if that's kind of the only cuddling and touching and kissing that we got, like, that would be really hard. There are people that do it. And, you know, I commend them for that, I guess. But it is. I didn't really commit to that. I guess. Right, but that polyamory, when you don't need every single relationship to fill every need, whether it's a physical need or, you know, just a time need or a raising children need or whatever it is, that it allows some relationships to exist and to be fulfilling that might not be able to. You just might not be able to have that at all if it were a monogamous relationship.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I know that definitely the time thing has been something. For a while, I was dating a guy. This was after, you know, this was post-monogamy, that I was dating a guy who we've decided to call Alejandro, I guess. But basically, he worked this crazy, crazy job where he was working like 60 hours a week, and we could only see each other from the hours of like 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. Like, that was the only time that he was available. And, you know, if I was monogamous and kind of seeking, you know, that life partner, that person who's definitely going to be everything to me at all times, it would not have worked at all. And or you could have tried to force it and probably made both of us really, really unhappy. You know, but us both being able to kind of seek different needs from different people meant that I could still have this awesome relationship with Alejandro. I could still have this great, really satisfying relationship with him because he didn't have to be that. Something that we often get is, you know, people hear like, oh, like, you've got three partners, like, I can't even handle one, like, that's ridiculous. And it's because, of course, if you think of, you know, the traditional monogamous sense of, like, this is the person who gets 100% of my free time, and you kind of hop to, well, multiply that by three, well, that's freaking intense. And I agree, I would not want that at all. And so it's just like a little bit of a different approach. And for me, I found it really satisfying because of the fact that it allows me to say yes to more people. As in, like, say yes to more experiences, you know, kind of seeing, like, well, what would it be like to have this person in my life? Even though maybe it doesn't fit perfectly, but what would it be like? And these are the experiences that help me continue to expand myself as a person, that Absolutely. I learn and I grow and have amazing experiences.
Mm-hmm. Another example of this has to do with sex. That's right. I said it. has to do with sex.
I'm surprised we made it this far without right? saying it. Yeah. Not normally how it goes. Yeah.
Right.
You mean
so
the nasty skull with flowers wasn't doing it for you?
Right. For example, I have a relationship in my life where we've been together for like 3.5 years, and we almost never have sex. Like, our relationship is essentially functionally asexual. And interestingly, neither of us identify as being asexual ourselves. There's just something about that relationship where sex is not really a fundamental part of it. And that's something, again, in monogamy, that would be really frustrating. That would be like, okay, like I have some needs, and for some reason we just don't have that part of our chemistry. I'm so sad that I have to give up all these other great things that we have, the conversations that we have, the stuff that we like to do together, the amount of caring and intimacy and this unique perspective we have on each other's lives. I'd have to give all that up because I wouldn't want to live the rest of my life without sex. Right? That's another example of a relationship that I get to have and that I value very highly, that polyamory allows me to have.
Yeah. And one type of relationship we wanted to talk about, none of us are parents, obviously, but I did grow up with a single parent, and I know eventually, after a time, my mother decided that she really just wanted to parent me alone. And that's something that kind of polyamory offers, is that you can be a single parent or you can be a couple parent, and you can decide to parent with multiple people or parent just by yourself and still pursue relationships outside of that. I know for a long time, my mother wanted to try to find me a father, and so she would date with that intention. And it wasn't until much further along, I kind of sat her down and said, look, like, we're good. You and I. That's all that I need.
And you said you were, like, 10?
Yeah.
Such a wise
precocious. I know, seriously. I was like, listen, we don't need to be doing this anymore. And it was great. Because she finally realized that she didn't really want a relationship. She had been doing it for a long time, and it broken up. Two marriages, you know, I was born out of an affair, and she just kind of was like, I have other relationships in my life that are important to me, and I don't need to find a romantic one.
And it's so interesting, we actually, last night at our Portland show, we met a mom, a mother of three, who identifies as solo poly. Like, she doesn't necessarily want to couple with someone, she's not necessarily looking for a father, you know, a new father for her kids or anything like that. She has a very healthy co-parenting relationship with the father of her children. And, you know, she shared about how difficult it is, especially as a woman, because everyone's expecting, like, well, if you're dating for that purpose of finding a parent.
Or
finding a dad or a mom or whoever it is. And so it is so interesting that we don't, again, coming back to that kind of all importance of the dyad, both for relationships and for parenting as well.
And that really helps us change the way that we look at relationships filling needs in our lives versus relationships adding value to our lives and not needing to fill something that we're missing necessarily.
Yeah, and to go off of that, I mean, for first dates for me, they're so much easier than they used to be. Because at one point, like, I was dating people to potentially find a mate, and when I was monogamous, that was kind of the end goal. And now when I go on dates, that's sort of out of the picture. I just can kind of see people for who they are and get to know them as they are, instead of being like, well, you're on an audition right now, and like, I hope you pass the test, but maybe you won't, and then, you know, I've got to do this all over again. And it's allowed me to kind of find these really incredible people and incredible relationships that I would have probably overlooked otherwise.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Yeah. I mean, like, there's a reason why dating has this stigma of being really stressful. Because it really is.
You know, when you look at it from that perspective.
You know, especially if it is really, you know, I'm dating to find the person I'm going to marry. Yeah. I'm dating to find the person I'm going to have kids with, that it really does become like this high pressure audition. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just like this game we play, right? Where we just put all this pressure on each other. And I think it's this subtle thing, because it's not quite the same as just like not having any standards, you know? So it's not like going on first dates and just like not giving a shit, you know, what the person says or does. Yeah. For me, it's kind of opened up this idea. So in The Ethical Slut, which for a long time was considered like the Bible of polyamory and non-traditional relationships.
this is the new one, right?
It is, actually. It's that good. Well, they wrote a passage. There's this beautiful, beautiful passage in The Ethical Slut called Clean Love, and it's about this idea of letting go of expectations in relationships. The idea that if you can just kind of stop and like let go of your attachments to your expectations and just see the person who's in front of you and just take the love that's there, and as long as that's making you happy, like, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And this idea that, you know, we get so scared of, like, what if it doesn't work out? What if this person is just as much as an asshole as the last one? Like, what if they do this? What if they do that? What if they don't respect me? And this idea that, like, you know, you kind of go into it, and if they don't, like, what you've lost, hopefully, if you're able to maintain your own boundaries, you know, you've lost a little bit of time. You know, maybe you've lost a little bit of a fantasy. But then, you know, you're free to go on to the next. And, like, I just, that idea of clean love, of, like, loving without expectations, has been so inspiring for me in my relationships. And particularly ever since, you know, I became non-monogamous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We wanted to talk about specifics. So something that we were hoping to get out of tonight is to kind of look at your relationships and specifically find the things that really make them each unique.
You know, we've been talking about these broad concepts of what is it that are, you know, good qualities to have in a partner, what are the good qualities that we might seek in a partner, but we really wanted to kind of highlight the focus of these specific things that you have in your life already, these specific things that you have in your relationships already. I think that for me, it can be very, very easy to really attach to the things that are going wrong in my relationships. You know, as long as they're not like deal breaker things, you know, that's a whole different story, but I can really attach to, like, oh, we're having all these misunderstandings, or oh, we keep arguing about this little stupid thing, without really stopping to realize, like, wow, like, there's so much that I have in this person. Like, there's so much that I'm getting from this relationship. For me, it's kind of had to be this, like, focusing on the, I mean, this is kind of a weird approach to it, but focusing on the negative space of, well, what are all the problems that I don't have in this relationship? You know, for me specifically, so right now, one of my partners is Turkish, and he lives in Istanbul, and I spent part of the year living with him there. And one of the big challenges in that relationship is the language barrier. You know, I mean, he speaks fluent English, but when it comes to talking about high concept things and the kind of conversations that you have in relationships, when you talk about things like expectations and vulnerabilities and communication, that those are things that really do get lost in different languages and in different ways that cultures communicate. And so that's been the source of, like, a lot of frustration in that particular relationship, is that I don't know, I'm speaking as an American and he's speaking as a Turkish person, and I can tell you those cultures communicate very, very differently. And so while my mind gets really attached to that, I realize that I completely forgot, like, oh, hey, like, this is a person who has grown up in an extremely conservative, you know, religious Muslim culture, a very anti-poly culture, a very sex-negative culture. And when it's come to polyamory, he's been like a freaking champion, like a champion, you know, like, when I think about all the typical problems that people who are new to non-monogamy have, like the jealousy and the extreme insecurity and the extreme controlling, like, there's been virtually none of that. And so just kind of looking in that arena of, like, well, what are the problems I don't have, really opened me up to, like, oh my God, like, there's so many specific things that I do get out of this relationship.
It's kind of that concept of perspective that you guys were talking about with positivity and perspective of not, you know, you can always find negative stuff in anything if you're looking hard enough, right? But changing that perspective to be like, hey, you know what? Actually, a lot of this is really good. as long as you have your boundaries clearly set for yourself, so you're not allowing yourself to slip into a relationship that's unhealthy or that's really truly, you know, really truly not meeting your needs or making you unhappy, that within that, appreciating like, hey, you know what? There's a lot of really awesome things about this relationship. I don't need to focus on just these couple things that are hard right now. Obviously, you can listen to the previous, you know, hundreds of hundred-something episodes of ours for techniques for fixing that. But right, but that you don't need to dwell on it so much. So what we wanted to get to was this idea that in addition to having these kind of generally good traits in your relationships, that each relationship with every person is unique, and that there are things that you get from being with that person that you can't ever get from anybody else, and that they're not always the things you expect going in. It's not like they're checking boxes, right? I've got like 10 different things I need fulfilling, but just those unique things you never knew that the two of you were going to like share this amazing Sudoku addiction. I don't know where I came up with that.
What is this, 2005?
I was actually thinking of a relationship I had from like around that time.
That was a Sudoku addiction?
No, we were like, got so into Sudoku together.
Was, yeah. That's so quasi-romantic. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll do you one better. Let me talk about you for a second. So there's this really funny dynamic that I have with Jace, and that we've been romantic partners for 3.5-ish, almost 4 years now. We've been doing the podcast together for 2.5-ish years. So we've got kind of this one track of being romantic partners and one track of being kind of business and creative partners. And something that I absolutely love about this relationship is this is probably the one relationship in my life, in my entire life, that I've felt the most like we're consistently on the same team for most of the time. There is this kind of funny thing that happens is that honestly, in our romantic track, we haven't had a fight in like over a year, like an actual like fight, you know, getting really emotional, getting really angry at each other in like a year. In our business track, we fight all the freaking time.
I can definitely attest to that.
Yeah. And so, like, we were wondering about that before the show. Is like, is that our outlet? Is that as business partners, we can be mean to each other?
They're healthy discussions, but you do get a little snippy.
We get super snippy with each other because then, as soon as like our multi-amory meeting is over, we're like,
then it's all just love and
Hey, I'm sorry.
But we were wondering, like, maybe we need that outlet for it.
Yeah, we would need that to fight. I don't know. Fortunately,
I
mean, I think a lot of people do suggest that you don't necessarily go into business with your partner.
It's generally considered a bad idea.
I know. I think we're kind of like right on the edge.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good to have Emily and Paul around to keep us from killing each other.
That's true. Okay, I have one. You guys, if you listen to episode, I think it was 103, my partner Tate was on there on the episode about gender nonconformity, and they're super amazing, and they've been in a lot of relationships with female-bodied people, and I still am learning about that. And something that's interesting is that with them, I kind of become softer as an individual. With a lot of men, like, I sort of am, like, trying to, I don't know what it is, like, be a little bit more intense or more rowdy, or I don't even know, like, swear more with them, which is something I just tend to do. But with Tate, like, I get this really, like, soft kind of feminine side of myself, and I get to do that with them, and it's really, really wonderful. I allow them to kind of take the reins and, like, allow me to sort of be the soft person. And then with my partner who I live with, Josh, he and I are very different in the way in which we communicate. He's very much like an intellectual thinker. He's very much a chewer, and I am a spewer and very emotional, and it just kind of clashes all the time. But I realize like he has challenged me to grow in a way that nobody else has, because with Jace and even with Dedeker, like, it's very easy for us to communicate and to be on the same page and to always know what the other person is talking about. And with Josh, like, I'll say something and I'll be like, I don't think you understood what just happened there, and vice versa.
Yeah, but at least both of you speak English.
That's true. It's a little bit different, but yeah. But it's caused me to actually have to like go back and think about, okay, how do I communicate and what am I getting across to this person? And it really helped me grow in that way and kind of change and move forward. And I think that we're getting finally to a place where we can communicate effectively. And that's been really important in my life.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMail.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
An example that I wanted to give is with my partner, Brooke, who was on the show way, way back in the early days. Yeah. For those of you who've listened to all of it, you might remember her. But we kind of bonded right away over this interest in physicality, in, you know, fitness and just sort of general physical health. And just recently, we've really bonded over this idea of the kind of... like importance for your mental health in getting hurt, both physically and also emotionally. That this is something, this concept she introduced me to that is a concept in child rearing, actually. That's this idea that if you never let your children get hurt because everything's all foamed over, that they'll never learn their own physical boundaries. And they'll be more likely to hurt themselves more seriously in their adult life. And then we've also taken this and applied it to your emotional life. That if you're so sheltered from ever getting turned down or ever told that you're, you know, that something's not good or getting a criticism, you don't know how to handle that and you might end up, you know, spraining your emotional self.
Spraining your emotional ankle.
Yeah. Right. Much worse later on because you never learned sort of how to work on that, how to be able to handle an injury. But anyway, in just the pure physical sense, the fact that she and I recently went roller skating for a date, and she did have a fall at one point and got hurt and, you know, kind of rolled out of it. And she was like, oh, man, that's going to hurt. And I was like, you did it. You got hurt. That was amazing.
Good job.
She was like, oh, my God, you're right. I did. This is amazing. Right, and that's not something I've ever experienced with another partner. It's just this, like, true sheer excitement in challenging ourselves physically, being willing to get hurt like that. Is something that I never would have expected to find in a partner and that I love. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to move on to romantic phrases.
Let's do it.
Is that
yeah,
good?
That's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so Valentine's Day. So again, thinking about this idea of being specific, what Valentine's Day... And just in general, the romantic language that we hear in a lot of our films and our books and plays and stuff like that, is the exact opposite of being specific. Like, if you think about a lot of the classic romantic phrases out there, you know, it's things like, I only have eyes for you, or you're my everything, or you complete me.
I love you with all my heart.
Right, I love you with all my heart, right?
It's like, you love me with your blood pumping muscle?
But it's all kind of centered around this idea of like, if you were to break it down and look at it super logically, one partner is like, well, you know, why do you love me? And it's like, oh, well, because I don't look at anybody else. Yeah. Or, you know, what is it that's special about me? It's, oh, well, you're special because you're the only one.
Because you're the only one.
You're the only one I'm with, so that's why you're special.
That's I mean, if you think about it, there's a lot of romantic phrasing that's based on that. There's a lot of romantic songs that are based on that. That, like,
just nothing other than the fact that
you're
the
reason
only
you're
one.
Special is because you're the only one. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the most specific compliment I can give you.
Yeah. And so, I found that within the polyamorous world, there are people who, like, there are some people who will complain about the fact that they think polyamory makes things less romantic, especially if you're not prescribing to a strict hierarchy, or you don't have this primary partner that you get to say those sorts of things to. And they're like, oh, well, like, I lose all that romance. I miss being able to say those romantic things to a partner and having that kind of experience, I guess. And my challenge to that, and something that is actually kind of hard to reprogram yourself to do, is to say, no, you can actually be so much more romantic when you get specific. When you give someone that compliment of, I'm so in love with you because of these specific things that you bring out in me, or because of this experience that we've gotten to have together that I never would have imagined having with somebody else. And that this is true not only of your romantic relationships, but also your friendships or even your family members. It's like, right, I don't love you because you're my brother.
That guy.
Oh, God.
That might be part of it, but, you know.
Because you're my only brother.
Which is also not true.
Right, but I love specifically these things that you have, that we can have these sorts of conversations, and that we can, I'm going to use you as an example, Josh, is that we can get on the phone with each other and be, like, so painfully awkward that everyone else is like, God, are you and your brother not close? I was like, what are you talking about? I'm just like, that's just what we like to do. We like to embrace this, like, hey, bro-man-ski, like, how's going? But that's kind of like our sort of banter that we have in our conversations, and being able to have that with someone is a really cool, unique thing, and that's all, you know, like that, those sorts of things, and that it's not the same every time, right? That we get to always look for, what are those unique things about this person? Mm-hmm. What do I have with this person? And anyway, so that's kind of the topic for the rest of this episode.
I think that I would argue with the, you know, I don't think it necessarily has to be different every time.
Well, like, sure.
I think there actually is something
to
reiterating with your partner these very specific things that keep you, I was going to say keep you coming back, like you're, as though you're running away.
To be so general in the speech, and to kind of get to know your partners and your friends or whomever, and try to figure out, like, what kind of words of appreciation they really appreciate.
And something to think about with the specificity that actually this kind of comes down to gender lines. I know on this podcast we love bringing things back to gender. That something that men talk about a lot is they pretty much never get specific compliments on their appearance. Mm-hmm. Ever. Yeah.
That's very true.
Very, very rarely. You know, maybe someone will say that, you know, you are attractive or that you're good looking or that you're hot or that you're sexy, but women are much more likely to get very specific compliments either about the way they're dressed or about their hair looks or about certain body parts or about the way they move.
Or their eyes.
All that crap. And
like, geez, your facial hair is so attractive today.
Aww. Something, I don't know.
I grew it out a little for Seattle.
Oh. You're fitting in quite nicely.
Well done. Well, I heard some men in the audience do some grunting of approval. Like, have you found that to be the case? That you don't?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually a good point.
Yeah.
What kind of compliments do you tend to get as men, specific or non-specific? None. Do you?
I mean, you get a lot of compliments of, like, you know, I really appreciate how nice you are to me.
Yeah.
It's like a back on them again compliment, kind of. Like, but I'd say we get complimented on, like, our actions or our behavior.
Yeah.
Like, I tend to get a lot of comments from specifically from women that I know, being like, you know, something came up the other day, and I just wanted to say, like, thank you that you're always so respectful about consent, or something like that, for example. Yeah.
Going off of that, it seems like most of the compliments that men get, at least in my experience, are comparing you to other men. Like, yes, thank you. You are better than the rest. In your behavior, sense of humor.
Right.
But it's not like a, yes, you are doing something good. It's more of, you are not doing something bad.
Really? That's interesting.
Really interesting. No, that's totally true. I mean, I know I've definitely given compliments like that.
Yeah. I'm sure I have too. Jeez.
I wonder why that is.
I mean, I don't know. Because sometimes going through the world as women, we don't get good things from men. We get
I think that's a fairly universal human
experience.
Sure.
Well, no, I mean, of course, but I don't know. I guess for whatever reason, it's interesting that women will tend to say, hey, like, thank you for not being an asshole. Yeah,
the front. I was just going to say, I have totally given those compliments, and it's pretty much what you're saying. I'm like, I want to reinforce this behavior.
Exactly.
Like, all of their moms.
Yeah.
But
geez, yeah.
I'm just like, here's the thing I can do as a human being to another human being to encourage this person to, like, keep it up.
Yeah, and continue good behavior.
Maybe it is condescending. I don't know, but like you said, I'm like, maybe you deserve to be condescended to a little bit.
Salty.
On this subject, actually, I was at a I was at a party a while ago where we were playing this sort of like weird variation on the game Never Have I Ever. Where it wasn't about, like, oh, never have I ever done this thing, and then anyone who has, like, puts a finger down or takes a drink or, like, those variations of the game. If you haven't played it, go look it up. It's great.
Go to college.
Go to college. But what this was specifically you would write down something that you haven't done but that you would really like to, and then you would give it to other people there, and then they could, or, you know, you would choose someone to give it to, and they would mark down, like, hell yes, like, I don't know, let me think about that, or no, thank you, I'm not interested. And it was this way of kind of challenging yourself to think about those things, and some of them were kind of sexy things, but, well, a lot of them were kind of sexy things, but what was interesting is that I was kind of in a weird emotional space at the time, and what I wrote down on mine was specifically, like, I would like to have more than one female person compliment me on my physical appearance, like on physical qualities of myself. And I did this, and then another guy saw that and was like, oh my god, like, I want to do that one too. Is it cool if I steal your idea? It's like, yeah, absolutely. And his reaction was my favorite. That afterward, you know, that it, we did this thing where, like, you blindfolded them, and then people would, like, whisper in your ears, like, stuff that they appreciated about you physically. That's how we did the little game. And after this was done, it was like 5 minutes or something. And, you know, he's just kind of sitting there afterward. He's like, yeah, I'm going to have to go home and cry about that for a while. That it was just that level of profound experience, because it's not something you get very much.
Well, we're set up kind of with this dynamic where women are there to be observed, mm-hmm. and men are the observers. And it's, you know, we all kind of fall into those roles, whether we want to or not, you know, consciously or unconsciously. So I think that, you know, for a lot of women that I've talked to, sometimes it doesn't even occur to them that their male partner would want to hear specific compliments about his appearance.
Mm-hmm. Because
normally
she's used to getting it all
the time. She's used to getting it all the time. You know, and maybe she'll compliment him on other things. But I know for me that that's been something that within the past year specifically has come up a lot with my male partners, mm-hmm. talking about that, that I've had to retrain myself to go more in that direction.
Yeah. We had one more up here. Yeah,
I was just saying, coming out of a monogamous relationship, mm-hmm. but I wear my hair differently slightly. Okay, I wear my hair differently. I've received several comments about my hair, and my wife has given me comments about my behind, so.
you're saying that as a good
so
thing,
it's like
right?
Yes. You change one thing, okay, and then everything is just
got it.
Yeah,
excellent,
become sexy.
So actually, this is a perfect segue into. I'm not going to delve into the whole topic. But this idea of love languages, mm-hmm. you know, this concept that's been around for many, many years, that was put out by Dr. Gary Chapman.
God, Dr. Gary Chapman,
oh, yeah, as we call him on this podcast. Because the book, The Five Love Languages, is a very Christian book, and usually Christians don't jive with these three chuckleheads. But still, the concept of love languages is very important, and it's this idea that, you know, you have a certain natural preference for the way in which you like to express love and affection, and as well as receive it. You know, mm-hmm. the five that he gives are gifts. Yeah, giving, and receiving gifts. Oh gosh, it is my test. Okay, words of affirmation, so verbal expressions, physical touch that is non-sexual,
acts of service.
Yeah, acts of service, yeah. And quality time. Yeah.
Well done.
And so, thank you.
You passed.
Thank you.
Good job. Remembered.
And so, of course, as human beings, chances are we all want some of each of those five, but generally you're going to lean in one direction or the other, or maybe, you know, two of them will be very important to you. And so just having awareness around that is can really open up a lot of things in your relationships.
Yeah.
You know, so specifically, you know, if you have a partner who really, really gravitates towards words of affirmations, then those specific compliments will really, really go the extra
yeah.
mile. Versus if you have someone who's really drawn towards acts of service, that then it may be, you know, giving those specific compliments, but also following it up with some kind of actual action, you know,
yeah.
doing something for them, you know, or doing the dishes or whatever.
Yeah.
Or, well, as Emily, yeah, do you want to point out the thing about also just appreciating those?
No, exactly. I mean, in my Josh, he loves doing the dishes and cleaning the house and being the house husband, and, like, I'll come home to a meal, which is really lovely, but then he'll be like, did you see? I made you a meal. And you'll be like, I did the dishes today. And I was like, okay, yes, you, thank you so much. Like, it sometimes I have to be reminded, because I'll do those things and not expect anything out of it, but it really feels good to him to be appreciated for those things.
Because that's how he shows love.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, because that's his love language.
Yeah.
So you have to do the work on the other end to be like, okay, I know what this is, and I'm going to appreciate it.
Yeah. So in thinking about, you know, as you're crafting these very specific, meaningful expressions of appreciation or acknowledgement to give to your partner or to your partners, I find that this is actually a really fantastic technique for coping with jealousy. And jealousy is something that everybody asks you about, you know, when you're polyamorous.
Yeah.
Is like, how do you deal with jealousy? What happens if you get jealousy? Like, you know, it's the number one question easily. And there's many, many different ways of approaching it and thinking about it and deconstructing it. A technique that I really enjoy going to is, I call it the pay it forward technique. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, when you're having a moment of jealousy, or if you're feeling lonely, or if you're feeling unloved, or if you're feeling needy, that, you know, instead of just sitting and pouting about it, or instead of, you know, bothering your partner, you know, giving your partner a hard time about it, that you find someone in your life to express this kind of acknowledgement to. And it could be your partner, you know, or that the particular partner where you're feeling like the most jealous about, or the most insecure about. And, you know, usually it's, you know, just like send a text message to somebody just expressing like the specific compliment of, you know what, like the other day you did this thing and you helped me out, and I so appreciate mm-hmm. that you did that, and I so appreciate our relationship or our friendship or whatever it is. And kind of giving that to that person without expecting anything back,
yeah.
you know, just to give it. And for me, I found that that is the technique that has taken me the fastest from jealousy to feeling pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
Like, it's the fastest turnaround. It doesn't work for everybody, but for me, that's what's been amazing.
Yeah, get yourself out of that mindset.
Yeah. And so, you know, I feel like that can be directed at anybody when you're having those moments. But if you do choose to direct it back to, you know, the partner, or to the particular relationship where you're feeling a little dodgy, it can be so powerful,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, so powerful, especially if you really can do it, you know, without expecting like, well, this means that then my partner's going to solve my problem or whatever, but just to give.
Yeah.
is, yeah, very effective.
It's really huge. Yeah. So we know that many of you are here with your significant others or your partners or what have you.
Or
just
even
people
good
in your
friends.
Life. Yeah, people in your life that you love. And we wanted to give you the opportunity to share something that you appreciate about them that's specific. So if the lights can come up and if anyone wants to share.
Yeah. And let me just say one thing first, is that this is a podcast. It is being recorded. If there are names, maybe leave them out, mm-hmm. or you make up a fake name, which we love doing for people. unless you know for sure that they would be okay with that. But just keep that in mind when you're sharing. And if you are being shy, we can start the train rolling.
Uh-huh. Does anyone have some specific appreciation they'd like to share? See, the longer you sit there, the more awkward it's going to be if you're with your significant other. Because they're going to think that you don't have anything to share. So, we'll wait.
Yes.
Sure about my partner is from the first time we met, is your enthusiasm. Is boundless enthusiasm. And that was a new experience for me to find in someone. So that made it valuable.
Thank you.
So, I appreciate my partner very, very much, but I also appreciate that I can hang out with his wife and have an amazing time, and the three of us like work well together. And I'm solo poly, and I love having this relationship with the two of these people, that it can be so powerful. So I really appreciate her and that she shares.
Yeah, appreciation for metamorphs is awesome.
Love it. Yeah, this is not limited to partners right now.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
friends, family members, anything like that. Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna awkwardly not appreciate the one I'm here with. I love you, Will. But one of the things I've really valued about a polyamorous relationship I'm in, my partner, I'm in a long distance relationship. I'm secondary to him, and he's a little older than me. And it's interesting, like, he gives me a lot of life advice, and there's a little bit of that, like, mentorship dynamic. I end up having a lot of the same conversations with him that I have with my dad that I don't think would work if it were a nesting relationship, that sort of, like, powered of, like, feel like he has his shit together more than I do. But it works. I value it so much. Because I'm doing my own thing, and ultimately he has to respect that. But at the same time, I can come back to him and was like, I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing, and he just believes in me and is able to sort of guide me.
That's great. That's really valuable.
Yeah, and that's a very unique relationship.
Yeah, that's awesome. Definitely.
Yes.
She pushes me to grow. I take pride in the fact that I can grow emotionally on my own, but I can't do it nearly as fast as she helps me do it.
I love that phrasing of it too, that it's not that she does something you couldn't do on your own, but she improves it and helps make it better. That's awesome. That's great.
Anybody else?
The three of you. I have been questioning a lot of things, and since November and stuff like that, I've been going through the journey, and it's like your podcast has been bread of life. Probably the two of you will think we'll get this correctly, we'll get it really well, but it's been just having you as a resource and just listening to you guys and you challenging quite a bit, and it's been awesome, just fresh air, and just like realizing that things may be crappy a bit, but it's not all crappy. The sky is not falling. That you're normal. It's okay. And it's okay to think differently. And I really, really appreciate you. And thank you for coming to Seattle.
Oh, shucks.
Thank
you. I wasn't expecting that. actually.
I was not expecting that. Thank you.
Actually blushed a little bit. Who else?
I saw another hand.
Yeah, right here.
So I've never met someone who is more willing to like think about the way they think about things, and like we've been spoon-fed so much since birth. I've never met someone who's willing to say like, oh my gosh, you're right, like let's question this, like maybe I won't find the same answer as you at the end, but like let's look at it.
That's excellent.
see another hand here.
I think I would really thank my partner's patience and communication. When we first met, I was 22. It's a long time ago. And I was a horrible communicator. and she's
good one-sided communicator.
I was really good at talking. I wasn't very good at listening.
She's a one-sided conversation.
And she's really helped me become a better communicator and just a better human being. Just inspires me in a lot of different ways. And you guys have helped me with that too, just furthering that journey through communication and learning how to communicate with people. So.
Okay, can we do one more? I don't know how much of this
I can do. Well, I have one that I would really like to do. I know this might seem like the wrong holiday for it, but I would specifically like to talk about some unique things that I appreciate in my relationship with my mother, who is here. And it's that.
It's going off the rails.
And it's something that's really unique and amazing. I was thinking about this earlier today, is that I feel like my mother probably knows and has seen the formation of my personality and my life's journey in its whole more than anybody else in the world. And something that's so amazing and unique is that I feel like on the one hand, there's this person who, you know, could very justifiably argue that she knows me better than almost anyone, but she's never tried to keep me as just that one type of person, and that every change along the way, whether it's polyamory or whether it's doing polyamory publicly by talking about it on a podcast, right, or just changing my ideas about anything, about religion and all of that, that she's been willing to keep watching this instead of holding me to just like, nope, you can't change out of this one thing that I know you are. And that's a really amazing and unique relationship that I can only have with you. And so I wanted to appreciate you for that.
I think I saw one more in
the
back.
Yeah, there were, I think, two more, yeah.
Okay, let's do two more and then we'll take it home.
I really appreciate when my partner pushes me to do some things that I wouldn't normally do, like come to a podcast recording. She's like, let's go do this, and it's something that I wouldn't normally think of doing on my own. She like helps it, and we almost always come back saying like, that was really fun, that's really great.
And then there was one more over here, yeah.
I would say I really appreciate my primary partner being very supportive when I was going through a rough spot with one of my other partners. Taking care of me.
Yeah.
And he does all my cooking, too.
It is so wonderful to have, to have any kind of support network, really. Something that I've really enjoyed about being non-monogamous specifically is that you get this very special support network that includes not only multiple partners, but your partner's partners as well.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And that, like that, the metamour relationship, the relationship with your partner's partners, it's such a fascinating relationship because it's one that we don't really have a social script for, a positive social script for. You know, the only script we have is in the context of cheating or, you know, the other woman or all these very negative stereotypes about it. And it's, I find it very sad that, like, not more people realize that that's an amazing relationship.
It
can be such an amazing friendship. Sometimes it even blossoms into a romantic, you know, relationship, and not always. But having that as a support network, honestly, even just having someone else to collaborate with on, like, planning your partner's birthday party or whatever, you know, but being able to have someone like that is so unique and so amazing. And so it's wonderful that you guys have that.
Yeah, it is a really cool, unique relationship. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you didn't get a chance to share your thing, all is not lost. We're going to be hanging out afterward out in the bar out here, so you can still appreciate each other during that, or, you know, in the whole rest of your lives.
Definitely do that. Be specific. Let them know.
But we did have one piece of appreciation that we wanted to give as well, and that is to appreciate all of you. That every God, like, there's like, I don't even know where to start. First of all, to appreciate everybody who listens to this podcast, who tells us that this matters to them, that this is something worth doing, is huge. And then also to those of you who are here right now, today, that have decided to take part of your Valentine's Day to come hang out with us. And we just wanted to say that you are our Valentines. All of you. And that
you are our 10-headed Gorgon.
Or 50,
like,
or
50
how
headed. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Whatever it is. Yeah, and that just, like, I really can't stress enough, like, how much all of you mean to us. That you're here, that you support us doing this, we all get emotional about it sometimes. But going from a few months ago saying, hey, let's do a tour and do this thing live that we normally just do in my bedroom on some microphones.
In front of some cats.
Yeah. They love it.
And it's like, hey, let's go and see if people would come out and see us do this. To go from that, like, fuck, how do we do this, to then having people help us put this together, help us market it, help us tell people what's going on, and then also just showing up and being here and participating in this is just so amazing, and I cannot express
it's been
enough.
Overwhelming, and thank you all so much.
Well, is it time to take it home?
It's time to take
it home. Okay, I think they're done. Alright.
There's this thing and that thing over there.
I'll be more specific with my expression.
Over there.
I just published a book, my very first book, called The Smart Girl's Guide to Polyamory.
It's a 1 week old now.
It's brand new in its infancy.
It's Tuesday.
And you can pick up a copy here. I will be sitting around doing some signings if you're into that, answering questions about it. If you don't want to pick it up now, that's fine. You can order it on Amazon. You can waltz down to your local Barnes & Noble and pick it up there, and that'll be great. If you're interested in learning more about us or listening to us some more, you can find us online at multiamory.com. You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, anywhere where fine podcasts are sold.
It's free.
It's free. Yeah.
We won't make you pay for it.
We also have a mailing list sign up if you want to go over and see our roadie Paul. He has a clipboard where you can put your email address down if you want to be kept up to date about where we're going to be and when our next podcast is, things like that.
And that whole setup's going to move out into the bar area. So you guys can hang out. We're going to be here for a while. Please feel free to hang out, socialize, discuss more of these things, get your book signed, all of that stuff. We also want to give some special thank yous.
Yes, so Paul, thank you. Paul has been my bedmate for like the last week, and he is wonderful at it. I love him so much. And he's fabulous, and we really, really could not have done this without you. So thank you so, so much, Paul.
Yes, just picking up all those extra pieces that we keep dropping as we're
Plus,
trying to do this
Plus, he's absolutely
thing.
Hilarious, and we love him.
Has kept us from killing each other on the road.
Exactly.
Yes, we would also like to thank my brother Josh and Natalie, both of you, for helping us book some venues for this tour, including this one where we are right now. Seriously, that was so helpful to us because the idea of booking a tour is like, what? I don't know how you do that. That's not something I ever learned.
Thank you, Josh.
And thank you to The Rendezvous. You guys are amazing. And also tip your waiters and waitresses, please. Thank you. And buy some more alcohol and buy some more food. Do it. It's going to be awesome.
All right. Thank you all so much for coming. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Thank you, Seattle.
Thank you, Seattle.
You've worked hard for what you have. Your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.